If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Civ is proudly supported by Murdoch University's School of Arts, who have been with us since the very beginning, and it's where we all learnt how to make podcasts, radio, and videos. If you're interested in a creative degree in games, sound, film, journalism, or maybe you'd like to mix and match, you can head to murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got going on and what's on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift episode 103. My name is Mitch, and if this is your first time joining us, we are a show that celebrates the indie games from across Australia and around the world. Joining me on the show today is my co-host, Scott.
Hey.
And our guest tonight is Alada Aponyi, and so thank you for joining us, Alada.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Aladar is the creator of Eatvolve, the evolution platformer. But first, what are we talking about, Scott, before we get to that?
We'll be discussing how having an audience can make difficult games much more enjoyable.
Awesome. All right. So, let's get into it.
Hey there. If you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
So we all know that playing games with friends is almost always better than playing them alone, but what about playing them for an audience? An article by Patrick Klepik pointed out he got much more enjoyment out of recently released Dead Cells with an audience cheering him on while streaming. What do you think about this, Mitchell?
So I've actually found that games are actually a lot more fun while streaming. One of the best examples of that I can identify right now is probably Fortnite, a game that I very publicly dislike but play almost every Friday. Yeah, and that is a lot more fun with people to hang out with and people watching. So I kind of agree with this. And like just with people in the chat, you know, telling us where to go, requesting we execute certain things and building certain things, it's brings another element to the game that makes it bearable for me.
Yeah, I mean, as I said in the opening there, like, you know, games are almost always better when you've got other people involved. So this is just taking that to, like, the next level by not only having people to play with, but having people watching you play. Because obviously it works both ways.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know. It just seems like, and also when we played Stifled last week on the stream, that was definitely something that I don't know. I'm not a horror game person, and it was definitely. I was nervous playing a horror game because it's not a genre that I go for, and
you know, that was really handy. Even though just to pat my own back, because I was the audience for you live in the studio and helping you with little things that you weren't quite getting, but just, you know, that outside looking in is sometimes really nice and refreshing.
Yeah, Alada, do you find that playing games with an audience? Do you find that makes it better for you?
I mean, I've never done any streaming, so I can't really speak to that. But whenever I play something, my older son is watching me, and you know, I get a little bit of that audience there. He's you know, cheering me on, or you know, excited to see new levels and things. So that's fun.
That was something that Gianni brought up while we were talking about this topic last night, actually. he said, well, the evolution of, like, that's kind of like the basis of this idea is like playing games like with your friends sitting next to you. They might not necessarily be playing with you, but like they're experiencing it with you, and that makes it better. And I think that's a lot of what's great about some horror games. Like Slender, I remember once we took a laptop into the middle of a forest near my house and played Slender in the forest, which was a nightmare. And I didn't like it. It wasn't my idea. But we did it, and it was with a bunch of friends, and it was awesome. So that kind of thing, I think, is like an element of gaming that is rarely ever talked about.
I know we did mention hard games in particular, but I don't really have any hard games that I can draw off of my experience, because I don't really play. I mean, I don't know really what you'd consider hard anyway. It's all pretty subjective. But like, you really only need to look at the ever-rising success of, say, like Twitch, and, you know, to realize that it's almost less about the game these days and more about the social aspect of it. So, you know, like, and much like with sports in real life, you know, it's much more fun to play in a big, you know, in front of, or with lots of people in front of an audience than, you know, having a kick down the park by yourself. You know, where we have more fun, we're involved with a crowd, we're biologically inclined to kind of move and act together. And also there's lots of roles if you're viewing as an audience during viewing a stream. You know, you can view from the helpful position, you can view from an extremely unhelpful position, you can be funny, you can troll, you can be engaging, you can just be there with the niceties because you like the streamer. You know, it's socially, it ticks a lot of boxes for people. It ticks a lot of boxes for a lot of people, I think, and that's the important bit of it and why it's still rising, I feel.
A lot of games are now being built into the whole audience participation aspect, like, yeah, especially with Twitch, like one of our favorite games, Party Golf and City of Brass.
Yeah, City of Brass
have
as well.
A great interactive element where Twitch viewers can type in certain commands and it affects the game. And that they're not necessarily playing the game, but it's part of that. It's part of the audience being there and contributing to the narrative.
Well, the report from last year's Digital Australia, well, report from 2018, said that I think only, so I found only 8% of Australians in 2018 were playing alone. That means the remaining 92% were playing with friends, partners, families, or even people online. You know, we want to be connected, and this is our new avenue to do it through.
And it's like, it's given you a new way for people to find their audience. And it's just a fun aspect of it that, I don't want to take away from games saying that, like, oh, games aren't good without an audience. Like, that's not really what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, definitely not what we're saying. It's just that I think games are coming into their own where they are more enjoyable to play with an audience because there's so many platforms that are facilitating that kind of, again, social aspect of it. So it seems silly not to embrace what they've almost written into the games, you know, the ability to have an audience. You know, we're also, I've got a really good quote actually from Ron Curry, who is the CEO of IGEA, and he was talking about the Digital Australia report that I was just mentioning before. He said something along the lines of, like, we're playing with a lot more purpose these days, with more and more Australians recognising the value of games beyond entertainment and into these whole, you know, social, family, school, workplace areas. Games are kind of getting more important. They're filling more important niches in our lives.
Alara, is that something you've considered as a developer that people are, even though you've made a single-player game as Eatvolve, but have you ever considered that people might be experiencing it in a different way than maybe you designed it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like earlier on in development, I had the game on itch, and I'm not sure who, someone noticed it, and a few people had put some Let's Plays on YouTube, and that was fascinating to sort of see people's reaction and some comments about the game. And I'd put it up there just to be able to share with other people what I was working on, but I hadn't really considered that people who weren't game developers would download it. So and that sort of helped shape the direction of the game a little bit, even, you know, the things that people liked or made a big deal about.
But just on that, it's like how you see your game to be used after you've kind of, you know, left it free into the world. Just while I was doing our research on your game in the last week, I watched a couple of streamers playing your game on YouTube, so Ambivalent Hero and Gaming Faster Than Light. And the whole way that they played it was different and more enjoyable just because they knew they were doing it for an audience. I really enjoyed it. It was a nice experience. It was a remarkable game to watch as an audience as well, because you know, it's not the longest or most impactful kind of game, but it was very entertaining.
So, glad to hear it.
So if you're just joining us, hello, welcome. We are Pixel Civ, and this week we have Alada Aponyi joining us, and he's going to be talking about his game Eatvolve soon. But right now we're talking about how games can be more enjoyable and you can be motivated to push through difficult games while having an audience. Now, one of my favorite games I think I've ever played is Dust and Elysian's Tale, and that is particularly difficult for me anyway. And I've never streamed it, so I'm wondering whether that would be better as a streaming game. I wonder if I'll have more fun in that. So that's one of those experiments that I've wanted to try in the future to
see. Funny thing, having someone cheer you on, like if you're getting frustrated with a part, you have to repeat.
Absolutely, yeah. And like having someone
overcome that and.
Oh, sorry.
Overcoming that.
Yeah, overcoming it. Yeah, like it just seems like you can definitely be way more motivated because someone's watching.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's an extra drive there to do a little bit better. You know, from your games, you know, let's talk about
give it one more go rather than you know, throwing the towel in.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I'll go back to it just because it's your go-to hard game of the 2000s, but you know, Dark Demon Souls, whatever, any of them, pick them. You know, they are a highly streamed game, and surprisingly, when you compare it to a lot of the other games that are big competitors in the streaming world, you know, your Dota's, your League of Legends, your PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, even Overwatch and whatever to a lesser extent, these are very specific games. You know, that they all fit into very similar kind of areas of you know, smashing up and enjoying stuff. So it is strange to see other games jumping into that.
Yeah, Moody Xander in the chat says, for some reason, seeing someone watching, reacting to something is a much different feeling, is a far different feeling than actually reacting to it, which is interesting.
Yeah, maybe there's a bit of like a safety barrier of entry there where, you know, the risk to yourself is a lot less because somebody else is doing it.
So, like, speaking of risk to yourself, Epivorous mentioned that watching someone shred on DDR in an arcade might be like the first iteration of this kind of phenomenon.
Yeah, right. Like, I definitely have done that many, many times in my life. Just like watching someone blitz it. Like, oh, man. If only.
DDR and then trying it and immediately.
No,
just not,
never doing
never
that.
Happening.
Never try. Not while they're there anyway. What do they what leave? No, I've had many, many DDR failures in my life. Let's not get down that road.
Nah. All right. Speaking of getting down a road, I think we should move on to our next topic,
segue,
which is Eatvolve.
Hey, Mitch, what are you doing this Friday?
I'm playing Fortnite this Friday.
But didn't you hate that game?
Yeah, but I'm going to go get my pickaxe anyway.
What time is it on?
It's on at 7:30 p.m. on every Friday night. We play Fortnite and I hate it.
You'll love it.
Ugh.
On twitch.tv/pixelsift.
Now, Mitch, is that 7:30 Western time or Australian Eastern Standard Time?
7:30 Perth time.
Okay.
Western Australian.
Western Standard Time, just for all you Eastern staters over there.
Yeah, and it won't be me this week. It'll be Sarah.
That's fine.
That's if she remembers. I need to remind her.
Anywho,
back to the topic. We are joined by Alada Aponyi, a.k.a. Puppeta, all the way from Melbourne. He is here to talk about his game, Eatvolve. So, Alada, can you give me a quick rundown of the game for everyone not familiar?
Okay, yep. So, it's a evolutionary eat-em-up. It's a platformer where you begin life as a lowly worm. You don't have much ability to do anything, but you can eat other creatures, and by doing so, you take on their ability and body shape. So it's a bit of a game about exploration and discovery, finding what creatures do what, and sort of, yeah, there's a few things to discover there.
So where did the idea and where did the inspiration for the game come from? Did you like see like a worm crawling across the ground and be like, ah, game right there?
The original idea is from a global game jam. I think it was 2014. The theme was Ouroboros. So that's the snake eating its own tail. So I attended that in Sydney with some friends and came up with sort of the core of this idea at that time. But the team, in 1 weekend, we didn't have much time to get a lot done. Like it was, that was sort of more than we could achieve in the weekend. And we ended up sort of scrapping this idea and going ahead with a different idea. So a few years later, I decided that I wanted to try and start learning programming. And I remembered the idea as something simple enough that maybe I could try to build this to learn programming.
So if how do you know? Because I assume this wasn't your only idea you had in the back of your head. How did you choose this one to really flesh out?
I guess the evolutionary, like the having the player sprite change, the idea sort of just came into my head. Like, this will be it's a platformer. So, you know, I imagine it's, you know, I was naive, but I thought this would be an easy thing to do as a first game. And just the idea appealed to me, you know, having sort of this change in ability as you play.
I like how you've kind of injected a little bit of RPG flavor into a very classic platformer style. Was that part of the plan all along?
So like the very first version, which I got working within a couple months, was like a linear, you start as a worm, you ate a frog and then a sugar glider. And that was sort of, the whole game. It was quite easy to see areas to add to the game to improve it, other creatures. So sort of just grown over time and it got quite complex. So I wanted to explain that to the player somehow without a tutorial. I'm not sure if I'm succeeding there, but hopefully it's sort of understandable, like discoverable as you play.
Is the game sort of like an endless runner type deal, or are there actual levels? I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, how do you win?
Is there a win, creature? Or do you just play?
yeah, I don't mind that it's a bit aimless. I enjoy that you sort of make your fun or do the thing that you want to, rather than being always pushed to do something. But I do have a boss creature right at the top of the level. Although it's not finished, so I'm hoping to have a couple different ways to like have an ending screen and ending state.
Now, I've noticed that the game does click back pretty far on the internet as far as its launch date. When did you actually launch the game originally?
Like I said, I just put it on itch in order to share it. I think it was like just before like Games Week in Melbourne, maybe 3 years ago.
Right.
So my aim there was just to be able to show other developers that I was working on something.
And going back to something you said just previously, that when you were face making the game, you had something completely wrong about it. What did you learn, and what did you have completely wrong about the game?
I guess I was naive. I have worked as an artist for a while, so I sort of had my assumptions about that, which, I decided I'll try and do pixel art, as it's slower resolution, that would be faster, but that's turned out to be, time to do all those pixel animations versus 3D animations. There's a more work up front, render from different sides, or use a 3D model in the game that gives you sort of more flexibility there. So, programming, I've actually found that and that's been great, but the design itself, that's been a real challenge. Make the game cohesive, I guess.
And is this something that you'll kind of keep working on? Is it a bit of a passion project that you keep kind of patching until you're happy, I guess? Or until you're done, air quotes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to get like a version 1 out early next year and launch on the iOS and Steam.
Cool.
So that will sort of have a few different endings and a couple more creatures to discover, that kind of thing. And then, if it's received well, I'd love to continue working on it, like adding underwater creatures, like amphibious creatures and stuff.
Yeah, sweet.
If it isn't received well, I'll probably have to just start another little project, I guess.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be received well. So if you're watching us on Twitch, thank you very much for joining us. We are, and thanks for tuning in. If you're just joining us, though, we are talking to Aladar Aponyi about Eatfalve. The eat 'em up? What was it? The eat 'em up? Platformer game. That's how you described it earlier, right?
We have a couple of questions in the chat. One from Epivirus asking how long the game takes to play. We'll start with that one.
So, like, you can have like a really short life of just a few seconds if you're eaten by something, another creature straight away, but through to maybe 15 minutes would be the longest life. You start in sort of a dirt area. There's a couple different areas. I wouldn't imagine more than sort of 20 minutes for a single life.
Right. Yeah. So there's no definitive win at this stage, but you can get eaten and you can lose.
I mean, there is that boss creature in the build, the current build.
Currently.
Yeah.
Judging by my playthroughs I had before the show, I think my average life was about 2 seconds. Like, Fiona was like watching me play it. It's like, you keep dying. And I'm like, yeah, sorry.
So we've got another question from the chat, this time coming from Limbot. And they're asking, did you find Game Jam a useful process?
It's just great to be forced to try and come up with something that you could try and achieve in a couple of days, and it is a bit stressful, and I never find that I'm able to sleep on the floor in a well-lit computer lab, but meet other developers and test out some ideas, so I really enjoyed it.
You previously worked for Team Bondi, who made LA Noire. Like, what was it like working on that kind of project, and then what's the contrast between working for yourself on your own project?
So I went through like a few years on LA Noire, and early on it was really exciting, and a lot of R&D for the sort of next gen of consoles. So I had a great time there early on, and then sort of as the project got on and the deadline loomed, to be a bit of a grind. Like 6 days a week, and then I remember we were told that we were doing 7 days a week, and that was the point that I decided that I would leave the project. I did nearly an entire year just working on roads. So
that was a bit of busy. That was a bit of a messy partnership there between Team Bondi and Rockstar, was it not? How was that working through that relationship?
I mean, I never was in those meetings management and the Rockstar people. I left before probably the worst of it from, friends who stayed there. It got more heated towards the end. But, the yeah, I guess.
Yeah, all right. Enough about that depressing story. So you discussed earlier taking your game and showing it to developers, but you've also shown it to just consumers and players. What do you think is different about showing it to each audience?
So showing to other developers is you get a different kind of feedback than them just players like at PAX. I guess other developers, they are more often going to tell you something that they would change or fix or give you ideas for how to solve issues that they see, which can be helpful. But I think players who don't have those ideas about how to solve problems, that can be more useful because you can just see they're getting frustrated with something or something doesn't make sense, and they're not telling you how they would solve that. They're just you can recognize as a problem there.
I can imagine with too many developers putting in their two cents sort of thing, it could be a bit of the too many chefs spoiling the broth type of situation.
I mean, I value that feedback from other developers.
Of course,
not to say I don't. And as a mostly solo developer, I'm sort of choosing what to put in and what to leave out. But players are, I think you'll quickly recognize issues with them.
Just on being a solo developer, because you have been a part of Team Bondi and now you're doing your own thing, how is that for you? Do you find it better being on your own and having your own direction and calling your own shots?
I mean, there's things to like about both. I do prefer working on my own than in a 100-person team. But I think that's mostly due to you're sort of a cog in a machine on such a huge team. There's less opportunity for your input on things. I've worked in smaller teams, sort of 10 to 5 people, and that's probably the preferable situation, where each person has their expertise and working together to solve problems.
Awesome. So if people want to find out more about EatEvolve, where should they go and where can they find out more information?
Probably the best place is my Twitter, which is Papadar with an underscore. Either itch page, or if you just Google EatEvolve, that'll show up. I try to tweet some in development screenshots and that kind of thing pretty regularly.
Awesome, Anna. One last question before we go from Epivorous. What is your dream platform to put EatEvolve on?
It's originally designed around the mobile phone. So, I guess the dream, everyone wants their things on Switch. I'd love to put it on Switch. That'd be great, but... at the moment, I'm just focused on the PC and iOS versions. See how it goes after that, I guess.
Nice.
Switch is definitely the flavor of the month at the moment.
It is everybody
the
wants
flavor of the
on
couple
Switch.
Of years, I guess.
And that's good.
Yeah, flavor. Yeah, yep.
And that's good because I think it's definitely earned it. I think that's about all we have time for. Thank you very much for joining us for another episode of Pixel Civ. Thank you very much, Eladar, for joining us.
Thank you, Eladar.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's just thanks for spending some time this evening to talk about EatEvolve. All right, well, I've come to the end. This episode was hosted by me, Mitch Lowe, and Scott Quigg.
Hello, hello.
And it was produced by Fiona Bartholomeus, and our executive producer is Gianni DiGiovanni, who wishes he could be here today, but unfortunately he couldn't because, he's still on sabbatical somewhere. thank you very much to Murdoch University School of Arts for continuously supporting Pixel Civ throughout all our episodes. If you'd like to learn more about the great creative degree, go to murdoch.edu.au/arts. And as always, we'll be sticking the links to all the topics we talked about on the show in the notes on our website, www.pixelciv.com.au. And yes, the absolute best thing you can do is head to the Discord, pixelciv.com.au/Discord, if you want to keep an eye on everything we're doing. We post everything there first, and you can chat to us about all that stuff, you know, what we want to do. So, yeah, we've also got social media pages on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You just search Pixel Sift in pretty much anything to get our yellow logo with the sift. So, Scott, if people want to go to other episodes and listen to old ones, where should they go?
Yes, people, you can go to our website to stream episodes, subscribe as a podcast, either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or whatever podcast player you like. We're on them all. We're live every Thursday. Next week at this time, join us for Pixel Sift Plays as we check play some of the indie games we feature on the podcast and more. Our next podcast is on the 6th of September.
Nice. All right. Peace out. Thank you very much for joining us.
Peace out.
Thanks, Alida.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.